Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 52 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
So today we're bringing back kind of a popular series that we did. I think we've just done once before, right, Sarah?
Yeah.
Where we answer listener questions, because we get a lot of really great listener questions, but they aren't always enough for us to do a whole show around, and so we've got quite a stockpile of them.
Yeah.
And today we're going to address a few of those, which I'm really excited about. But Sarah, first, I think you have a couple of
A couple little things. Thanks to everybody who listened last week in episode 51. We talked about getting ready and getting organized for summer. And we also offered up our ebook, which is called Summer Shortcuts. And we're giving it away to everybody and anybody who leaves us an iTunes review and then heads over to themomhour.com to leave a comment letting us know you did. It's super honor system, not fancy. I did just want to say that I put kind of an arbitrary deadline of May 31st on that so that I can go ahead and batch email the book out to everybody who's commented on the show notes for episode 51 by May 31st. Now, you guys know us. If you miss the deadline, will I still send you the book? I'm sure that I will. But what I will do, if you're waiting for it and you haven't gotten it yet, what I'll do is on May 31st or June 1st, thereabouts, I will send it in one email to everybody who's left a comment. And then if you miss it and you really want one, just track us down. You guys know how to do that. So I just wanted to mention that for anybody who's waiting breathlessly for their copy of
As I'm sure everyone, and they can't even really look forward to the summer without this ebook.
I mean, yeah. But you guys have time to get lazy, as we'll teach you how to do in that ebook. And thank you again, because we did ask for you to leave an iTunes review in order to get that, and it helps our show so much. So I've loved
it. And we got a whole bunch of new ones, which
I know,
is great.
I know, and we so appreciate that. So yeah, that's all I got from our end. So let's answer some listener questions. Listener mail. Okay, our first question is from Miranda, who lives in Alberta, Canada, and she has three kids quite close together. I want to say like 1, 3, and 4. Reminds me of me a few years ago and you a few years before that. Yes. Three little kids, and she's a photographer and has her own business on the side. So her question is about asking for help with the kids. Basically asking either parents or in-laws or friends for help watching the kids. And I know we have so many people who struggle with this, and sometimes it's not having the right people to ask, but a lot of times people are more helpful than you'd think. And I think, Megan, we've even talked about that, how sometimes it's just starting, just getting started. So I'll read a little bit of what she wrote and then we'll just go from there. But I'm curious, what are ways to ask for help? Maybe sneaky ways to ask for help so I don't have to feel weak. I'm in this mindset of I should be able to do this myself, and I hate asking for help, but we need breaks before we lose our minds. Ha ha. So I feel like we can totally relate to that, of feeling like you need to do it all yourself.
Yeah.
Does anything come to mind for you? I made a few notes of things I'd say to Miranda, but I'll open it up just if you have any first reactions.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, I think sometimes we blow up this asking for help thing a little out of proportion. I think what we think, what we're asking is going to be a way bigger deal than it is. Like, the amount that it would help me, for example, when I had a bunch of little kids under three, if someone ran to the store for me or stopped over to watch them so I could run an errand or whatever, meant so much more to me than it did to them.
Right.
You know, it wasn't really that big
of
a sacrifice for someone who's not already in those weeds,
yeah,
or even somebody who's right there with you,
right,
but knows that now they're kind of banking some karma.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, I really found that just – if people made really specific requests to me, I was always really happy to do it, even when I was totally in the thick of motherhood. It's easier to do someone else's dishes than it is to do your own. We all know that. It's easier to watch someone else's kids sometimes. I mean, sometimes just the break or the refreshingness of it, or having something different that's not that monotony, makes it feel easier or more interesting or more fun. And then also, I think that letting – and I've said this a million times – but I think that letting people help you does them such a service, because I love helping people. Most people love feeling good and knowing that they've made a difference. And I think that actually giving people an opportunity to do that for you, not only does it make them feel good, but it makes them then feel like they can ask you for help in return. Someone has to start the ball.
I totally agree. And one of the things I was going to offer to Miranda to get over the mental hurdle is a couple. Number one is ask for help far in advance. And this is like a trick that, like, you know, if you make your dentist appointment 6 months in advance, you're like, well, you don't worry about getting your teeth cleaned if you don't like going, or it's just on the calendar, right? And if it's a mental hurdle for you to ask, you can start small by asking 3 or 4 or 5 weeks out and asking a friend to watch the kids or whatever the ask for help is and putting it on the calendar. Because I know that I can talk myself out of doing something I don't want to do. And then as it gets closer, you get to use the excuse of like, oh, I couldn't find anybody to watch the kids or whatever. I guess my husband and I won't go on that date night. But if you put it on the calendar enough advance that you're kind of, it's done. And then as it gets closer, you're kind of committed. So that's one little tip I would offer. Mm. And the other thing you kind of touched on is if you have the opportunity, especially if we're talking about childcare and babysitting, to ask somebody whose kids are a little bit older, don't you feel like when you don't have a baby or a toddler, you kind of miss it, right?
Yeah.
And helping somebody with their little kids, even if you're in, you know, that sounds like your worst nightmare is having another 2 or 3 year old in the house, but somebody who's a few years removed probably kind of likes it. I don't know. I have friends who love having Violet because they don't have little ones at home anymore. So that's another... Yeah. Just a couple of ways to maybe get past the psychological hurdle of
asking. And it's a practice, right? Asking for help is something you have to practice to get good at. I think it can help to start with really little things that, you know, we all know that when you're a mom and you've got little kids, especially several little kids close together, and you're kind of in that stuck at home feeling, or if I leave, it's going to be like the biggest production ever. Sometimes something so small can make such a big difference. Hey, could you swing through and pick me up a coffee if you're out today or whatever? Like those little asks can make such a big difference to you that and would be no problem for someone else, not even an afterthought. I know for me now, my life, my schedule is so open and easy. Like if I'm out and you want something, not only will I get it for you, it's so easy, it's almost ridiculous. So, I mean, those little things too. I mean, those can sometimes make a big, big difference to you and maybe would be so easy to someone else. And it's a good, like, little baby step to get started.
I agree. And in Miranda's letter, which was longer, she also talked about – she does have family kind of close by. And she talked about some complicated issues with asking or reciprocating family help. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at is – well – family help can be complicated. And transitioning to having help from your peers and your support community in your community is almost harder if you have built-in family help. Does that make sense? So someone like Miranda might not be in practice of asking for help from peers and friends and mom friends because she does have some family network. Whereas somebody I know people who have zero family in town and you just kind of have to get good. You have to find paid babysitters or you have to ask your friends. You have no other choice. So I do think that's even more reason to start. And her kids are really little, so it makes sense that it's been family so far. But if that's a complicated situation, then even more reason to have that really reciprocal and mutually respectful helping relationship with your neighbors and your friends. And it's not, there's no magic wand for that, I don't think. But just like you said, if somebody has to go first, and it is a practice and it can start really small. And it doesn't mean you're writing off your family or that your in-laws will never watch your kids, but if you don't have to rely on family, then it's just one other layer of support. And it can be a really fun layer because they've got kids the same age. They're in the same. Yeah. So just a vote for building up that peer network, even if you do have family close by.
I also just want to say that sometimes you'll try and you'll strike out and that is not it's nothing. It's not you.
Yeah.
Maybe the other person is overwhelmed or forgetful or not nice. I mean, there's so many possibilities.
Yeah.
But it's not. Please, if that happens, if someone says they'll do something and they don't follow through, or if you just get like a no.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's gonna happen sometimes. Yeah. But you know, that's life. And so I feel like it's still worth trying.
Right.
And then you try, move on.
Right.
And you know, try not to let it throw you off the horse too long.
Agreed.
Yeah, everyone's got their own circumstances that you might not have are really privy to.
Yeah. So. Agreed. Just before we wrap this question, there was a related question from our listener, Amber, who's from milkandsugarbaby.com. She's a really supportive listener. And she was asking a question, but she also offered a great solution, and that was starting a babysitting co-op. So Amber had some of the same questions about asking for help, but I wondered if you had ever done anything like that, Megan, like any kind of a formal trade, or I know you've done childcare trades where it's scheduled.
Yeah.
And yes. Amber's point was that it felt more fair and you didn't have to worry about who was asking who more often.
Yeah. I've never been part of like a real babysitting co-op where there's several families and mm-hmm. everyone. I mean, I think sometimes you use like chips almost or like a point system. I've never done that, but I have had many, many babysitting trade sort of things. And my sister and I had one informally when we lived in the same town. It's been so long, I don't remember the details, but I do remember the details of the ones that I had here in the current town I live in. One was with Jenna, my sister-in-law, and one was with our other best friend, Missy. And it worked out. I mean, some of it was quite elaborate. Like one year we split a babysitter for like 15 hours a week and we split that cost right down the middle. But then I took an extra day with her kids, and I think I got like a stipend toward the babysitter or something for that. We got really creative with it because I was like, well, what would it take to make this worth my while? Yeah. I really only needed a sitter for like 15 to 20 hours a week. And then the other times I really didn't mind having another set of kids in the house. I mean, it was more work, but I didn't mind it because I wasn't working. So for me to have, you know, like $100 less that I was paying into the sitter was a big deal for me at the time. It allowed me to work less. And so it really helped. That was one way we did it. When Missy and I did it, we each had each other's toddlers. So this was when Clara and Missy's son, Sam, they're the same age, were both, I think two, maybe three. And each one of us would have both kids for 2 days a week. And then we would also do because in those days our kids had half day kindergarten.
Okay.
So whoever had the kids would also do the kindergarten pickup.
Oh, that's great.
That day.
Yeah.
So then you'd end up with like an extra kid for a few hours in the afternoon, which was great because all the kids were around the same age and they just played. And I guess, I mean, we just sat down and said, what do you need? What do I need? And we just wrote down all the hours and figured it out. And then we had 1 day a week off for both of us. Yeah. It was just our own family and we could run our own errands or whatever. So I think that if you have friends with kids that are similar ages, you can probably work it out pretty informally, but still have it be set enough where it's fair.
And again, it goes back to some of the things we were saying. If it's on the calendar, you're more likely to, you know, commit to it if part of your issue is even allowing for help. And number two, it feels fair because you do feel like there's some reciprocity if that's a concern for you. My friends and I had tried to do the babysitter co-op thing, and we were all just such good friends and so nice that we'd really just watch each other's kids whenever we needed to anyway. We did, just if you're not familiar, we did have little like poker chips that were like 15 minutes each. And so if you all start out with a certain number of them, you're paying your friends with increments of time. And that way, if you end up with a whole bunch, you realize, oh, hey, I haven't cashed in on this in a while. Like, I should go get my nails done and ask one of my friends. So it's just a way to sort of measure the reciprocity if you feel like that's necessary with your group. But
And you may not. If it's like one other person and it's pretty like with my family, with Jenna and my brother John and their kids, I mean, we've always just kind of had an open door policy. Kids run back and forth, but they're family. That's a little different. I think if it was a neighbor or someone you know, or if the kids weren't as close, because that's the other thing now, our kids are also close, that it's just really an endless play date that happens to go between houses. If it was someone that maybe the kids were different ages or not best buddies or whatever, maybe I would feel the need to have more of a system in place. But I think you can start with one person or two maybe and have like a round robin type deal going. And I want to say the year that I was doing when we had the split sitter with Jenna and John and their kids, I think Missy did get in on that a few times. Like, I think there was some times where she would kind of buy in, but just less formally. So she might buy in for a day, you know? So there's so many options. You can get creative. I think everyone wants to do something like that.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say to Miranda too is, you know, I don't know what her friend network is like, but you don't know if somebody would be interested in that unless you ask. I mean, somebody might want to be trying to get their business off the ground. Even if they're a full-time at-home mom, unless you ask, you don't know if maybe they also were wishing for some structured time away. And I know we are going to move on, but I have to throw in real quick that I forgot about this, but I did do a trade for evenings because one of Miranda's concerns was time with her husband and date nights. And I have done that when I had little tiny babies that I wasn't quite comfortable having a sitter with my infant and putting my toddler to bed. But it was one of my mom friends and she'd come over, she'd bring a glass of wine for when I'd have a glass of wine for her when the kids were in bed. She'd bring her book club book and she'd leave her husband with her own two kids, but she'd come put my kids to bed and we'd go on a date night. And then I would do the same for her. So, you know, I wasn't ready yet at that point for like a high school babysitter to have all three of my kids ages like 4, 2 and newborn. But one of my close mom friends could do it. And, right. And so that worked really well. And we did trade off. I mean, that was one where we were giving up enough that it was like, all right, it's my turn. Like I'll come over, right. You know? So that was for evenings. So.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. There's just so many options out there.
I know. And just take the leap. Take the leap and be brave. Yeah. So thank you, Miranda, and also Amber, because Amber kind of helped answer that one too. Okay, so this question, the listener asked to remain anonymous, so it's kind of exciting. No, it is a little bit of a stress, I know.
And I've already forgotten. You sent me these questions earlier, but I've already forgotten who asked this one. So it truly isn't. I have no idea who you are.
It's anonymous. So this listener is asking about what happens when you have friends who have a completely different parenting style than you. And she talks about their situation of very, very good friends from before kids. And the friends have an older child and then a toddler. And then this listener has a toddler. So their toddlers are about the same age. And she's talking about some philosophically very different parenting styles. What she says is that they're using kind of a more gentle, positive approach. They're not spanking, they're not yelling with their toddler. And these friends, especially the husband, yells, threatens, and spanks. So we're not talking about mild differences here. We're talking about pretty big differences. Yeah. Her concern is that the families are very close friends, and she doesn't see breaking it off. It's not the kind of like you met at the park and your kids are the same age.
Right, and you're like,
So, you know, her question is, have we ever encountered a situation like this? How did we handle it? What would we do? And she said, we can try to limit our daughter's time with them, but that's probably not the whole solution in this particular case. We want to stay in the kids' lives. So she wants to stay in the other family's kids' lives and vice versa. But we're talking about some pretty, pretty big differences in parenting style. So I don't know. I have some thoughts on this, but do you want to?
Well, you know, I will say it's a toughie. Mm-hmm. I think my answer would have been very different 10 years ago than it would be now.
Okay.
So keep in mind that I've been out of that
stage
where this thing even kind of comes up.
Right.
Really. I feel like over time, a lot of those differences that are very intense in the beginning just kind of mellow. I think a lot of people are really overwhelmed when their kids are little or are trying to get on top of what they perceive as behavior issues or are really like nervous and anxious about it. There's just like a lot that happens at that stage that I feel like kind of starts to mellow over the years. So for me, that kind of thing has not really been as big of an issue since our kids have been past, say, 2 or 3 and our friends' kids. I think the other thing that I would keep in mind is it a parenting difference that is the problem or is it the way you feel or your kids feel when they're around the other parents?
Well,
is the environment scary or, you know, threatening to them? Are the parents like, you know, I'm not even going to get into what my personal parenting discipline approach is. I'm sure you can probably guess. But that's not to say I've never gone over the edge in a different direction I didn't want to go in, you know. So is this something that is happening all the time in front of you and you're sitting there on the couch like, oh my God, this is awkward? Or is it something that like you're pretty sure goes on beyond closed doors? Maybe as they get more comfortable is going to start to ease up. Like I just think there's so many, there's just so many factors. One thing I will say, when I was a very young mom with very young kids and I was very earnest and I was in this very earnest message board group and they would say things like, well, you should, you know, confront them and give them advice and give them a book on positive parenting. And I could not tell you how much I don't recommend that approach.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear that they're doing it wrong from their friends. Nobody. And it's not going to be met. And it doesn't matter how much concern or love, right, you couch it, yeah, in. No one wants that. That's my personal opinion, and I'm sure there are people. I think you can lead by example.
Yes.
I think you can show that things, yeah, aren't as hard,
yeah,
as they seem. I think another thing that you can do if you feel like that reaction's happening because the parents are embarrassed, mm-hmm, because their kids are acting up in front of, mm-hmm, you, I think there's a lot you can do to be like, hey, it's cool, my kids do that too.
Right. Or, yes,
you know, don't worry about it.
Yes.
This is not a big deal. Just keep it very light.
Yes.
And that's really been my approach. And I feel like because of that, because they know that I'm not coming in like judging or, right, thinking they should do one thing or the other, right, that everyone can kind of relax. And then it's not really even a big issue anymore. Yeah. But, you know, your miles may vary on that.
No, you touched on practically everything I was going to say.
Sorry, Sarah.
No, you stole all of my thunder. That's okay. Well, one thing I was going to say about the ages of their toddlers, this listener's is 17, 18 months, and the friend's is 2. And you are hands-on parenting at every second. If you get two families, yeah, together with 2 1- and 2-year-olds, you're basically public parenting the entire time, right? I mean, if you know what it's like to be, especially to have 2 toddlers in the same room. So that dissipates so quickly to where, yes, at 4 and 5, the kids are playing in another room completely. You guys, yeah, can talk about TV shows and like your favorite restaurants. You're not doing the public parenting anymore. So that's one thing I was going to say. And I love that you said lead by example, because I was going to just give this listener encouragement to continue to publicly parent in the way that she feels is right for her kid. And that can be, yeah, intimidating if your style is softer and the style that is in the across the room from you is very like in your face. Because you can kind of feel like, well, I'm just going to shrink in and do my own thing. And I don't mean like, you know, go overboard and start to parent the other person's child, but continue to do what you would do with your child, even when you're in that situation, is what I would say. Because,
yeah, absolutely.
I do think that whether they choose to notice it or ignore it, or maybe even pick up something for it, I think in so many cases, there's a lot of insecurity driving, especially, yes, yeah, super controlling parenting styles. So, like you said, leading by example and saying, yeah, we're all going through this. I think you're not telling them how to parent, but you're giving everybody permission to not be perfect, including yourself.
Yes. And then I will also say really quickly that, mm-hmm, I can go in the other direction too. I've had other friends who we've been very close with who've like sat back on the couch and let their kids destroy my house.
Right.
And that also I just chose to just kind of grit my teeth and get through it because I knew the relationship at the end was worth it to me, even if, yeah, my house was like destroyed after every, right, time their kids were over. There's just everyone's struggling,
yeah,
in some way. So, yeah, at that stage,
yeah,
you know, like I think a lot of empathy,
yeah,
is needed.
Yeah. I was also going to suggest, and I don't know how applicable this is to this situation, but that you can always make arrangements, going back to our first listener question, to get together as couples without the kids,
yes,
or,
yes,
go somewhere where the hands-on public parenting is just not going to be quite as intense. And again, you're going to grow out of that anyway, but change it up. If maybe it's just a mom to mom, you know, it sounds like the husband is a bigger issue here. Maybe it's just a mom to mom coffee date and slightly, yeah, shifting the when and where of getting together with this family. And then the final thing I was going to offer is as kids get older, they notice these things too. And it's not a bad thing to give kids language to express how they feel when they're in kind of an awkward social situation or when they see different families being different. It doesn't have to be judgmental, but I know my kids, we don't do timeouts, but my kids were around tons of friends who were getting timeouts all the time and they would notice it. Like, and then sometimes they'd be like, well, we don't do timeouts. Like somehow they like drew the lucky straw or something. But you can, in the privacy with your own kids, and I'm talking about 4, 5, 6-year-olds who start to really notice these things, you can just talk about how every family does things differently and why your family is the way you are. It's not right or wrong, but here's why we choose to be this way. And, you know, here's how we can still be friends with people who act all different kinds of ways. I think those are good life lessons no matter what the scenario, but it is, kids will notice. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So it will come up for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anything else on that one? Hang in there.
No.
Hang in general. Hang in.
It gets better.
Okay. This next one's going to be a lot of you. Are you ready? This is from our listener, Ashley, whose son is in kindergarten. And she says, I've noticed a big change in friendships and peer relationships compared to the preschool years. The days when kids would automatically play with each other just because, hey, it's another kid, are gone. I'm completely bummed out by some of the mean girl behaviors I'm seeing even from six-year-olds. So she asks, how do you teach your kids to build good relationships with their peers, especially when your child has a personality trait that can be either really positive or be the cause of conflict? Like being bossy or being sensitive, you know, more extreme. And she just asked, when should you step back from giving advice and let them learn versus getting involved? And then how do we deal with our own feelings about this as moms? Because that's one of the hardest parts, right? Whew, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
When Ashley emailed us, I don't know if you remember this, when she emailed this to us, I replied back and copied you. I was like, yeah, that's a great question, Ashley. Let's ask Megan. Just because my oldest is second grade, so it's just the beginning of it.
So. Well, yeah. So again, I don't want to generalize about boy relationships and girl relationships. I will say this is not something – so I think we're in a very similar boat because I did not notice this kind of thing really at all until Clara.
Mm-hmm.
The boys chose their friends really carefully. They didn't hang out with kids that made them feel bad about themselves for the most part. I don't know. And have had, my boys have had the same like set of friends. Each has had like the same little set of friends basically since they were like in kindergarten or first grade for the younger ones. And then for the older ones, we just moved here when, they were in third and fifth, but they've had the same friends since. I think they just, maybe because they have all those brothers to hang out with.
Yeah.
They didn't feel the need to have a lot of external relationships, so they were super selective. So I don't really feel like, you know, I managed it. And we've talked about sibling relationships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would say I manage sibling relationships pretty similarly to the way I would manage a play date type mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. it just – because you kind of squelch it quicker when it's your own kids.
Yes.
And you learn
– And you can – often you can see – what's happening on both sides.
Exactly. You can see what's happening on both sides. You're not really – and you're not sort of biased one way or the other. Right. So, yeah, it's a little bit different. With Clara, I will say she's had more get-togethers where they've ended in tears and I don't even really know what happened. She's got friends at school. She comes home constantly and is telling me kids are mean. And, like, so it's, I feel like I'm a little bit in a new mm-hmm. ground too. In general, I will say that three – is not company mm-hmm. when it comes to kids this age.
Yes.
I don't think a get-together with three girls, I cannot remember a time it's really worked out.
I remember that from my
Someone own is childhood. Always getting crapped
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Even with Clara's cousins. She's got two cousins who she's very close to.
Right.
One's older and one's littler. Well, who do you think gets crapped on?
Right.
The little one. And Clara engages in it because right. she's younger, so she right. always got crapped on.
Right. Right.
And now she's got this young person to crap on. It's kind of like it's the cycle.
Maybe I should have known that before I had three children. I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, that's
well,
how it is.
I think it's a little different when it's siblings.
Yeah.
It's different when it's siblings. But I just talking about like for a play group. I've had, Clarence had two friends over before where one of them ends up excluded. And I don't, it can be very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff can get whispered. I mean, you don't even always really see it happening. And sometimes it's perception. Mm-hmm. Sometimes one of the girls just thinks she's being excluded. Mm-hmm. So I've just kind of eliminated for the most part, except for with cousins where I'm not going to say, no,
right.
I'm not having both girl cousins over. They have to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's more like a sibling group
right.
almost
right.
where they need to figure that out and figure out those yeah. dynamics. But for me, I don't really want play dates to
yeah.
devolve into tier fest. So I've really made it about either two or a bigger group.
A bigger group. That's good.
A bigger group.
I like that.
I try to keep... You know, if there's somebody who I've kind of seen becoming an alpha mm-hmm. in those situations, like in Clara's, you know, Clara's older cousin is totally an alpha girl
mm-hmm.
and other girls listen to her and respect her. Plus she's a little older.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably wouldn't have her over with like several of Clara's peers from her grade.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it would necessarily end well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing about Ruby being not a nice kid. It's more like the dynamic you're setting up.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I will say when there's been another girl about Ruby's age and then another kid Clara's age, it works out really well. It's
mm-hmm.
more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is just like balancing the groups.
Right.
I really try to pay attention and listen to Clara when
mm-hmm.
she tells me about
mm-hmm.
girls at school
mm-hmm.
that she tries to be very diplomatic. She's always afraid of hurting people's feelings.
Aww.
And she just kept telling me about this girl in school. And she kept coming up and not in a positive way. And then at the same time, the girl's mom was calling me constantly trying to get them together.
Oh, yeah.
And one day Clara said, I just don't enjoy her. And at that point, I was like, okay, I get it. Yeah. And she was sitting next to this girl and didn't really enjoy her mm-hmm. as a seatmate either. And there was, so I just really had to kind of pick, like, really read between the lines of what she was trying to tell me mm-hmm. for a while. And then she finally just came out and said it. I don't enjoy her, which could mean a lot of things, right? But I that was her way of saying, please don't call back. Don't call this
yeah.
mom back.
Yeah.
And tell her, you know, yeah. we're going to get together.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes they're, and the boys had a friend where they had this situation for a while too, where there was a lot of pressure for the boys to play with this one particular boy, and right. It was worse because one of the boys, Owen, really liked this kid and William really didn't.
Oh.
And so a lot of times I would try to throw them together.
Yeah.
And then William wouldn't want to stay, and I would feel like
yeah.
kind of embarrassed, like yeah. the mom was.
Yeah.
But I finally had to get over that and be like, yeah, this mom is not going to get it.
Yeah.
And, but it's not my job
right.
to make her get it.
Right.
And Owen can still play with him,
right.
But William doesn't want to, and right. I have to listen to what he's telling me
right.
about that. I don't know if this is answering this question.
No, I think, yeah, no, I'm so impressed
like I'm
with
rambling.
How you are on the fly. You're giving, and okay. you're buying me lots of time to think about how okay. much I don't know. No, that was great. So a couple of things that have come to my mind. One is I really try to start with my kid's emotional situation and to start helping with that first, especially when we're talking about what's happening at school, because I can't control what happens on the playground, right. But I can help my 8-year-old understand what she's feeling. So we talk, I mean, I'm like you, I just kind of let her talk and ask a lot of questions and kind of give her tools to understand what these feelings are. Am I feeling left out? Am I feeling smothered? We've had a situation where that wasn't a mean girl. It was a clingy friend, kind of an yes. insecure clingy friend who was being possessive. And sometimes our kids don't even have the language to know, like Clara saying, I just don't enjoy her. They don't have they don't have the like emotional intelligence yet. So listening and asking questions and starting with like, if there's a problem to solve, there's air quotes. If we have a problem to solve, I guess I'm going to start with my kid's feelings and helping her understand what those feelings are and what steps to take to get out of that yucky feeling rather than let's go work out this fight with a friend. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because I feel like that will follow. The conflict resolution skills and the social skills will follow if she understands how to kind of identify and process her own emotions. So starting small and starting kind of internally. Does that make sense? It's a
yeah,
little
totally.
Out there.
Yeah.
And then also the teacher can be your advocate if we're talking
yes.
about what's happening in school. And you don't have to get a teacher involved as like a mediator. You can just say, hey, here's what Allegra's been telling me. Or not, you don't even have to start there. Just say, Allegra's been upset, you know, about some of the social dynamics. Can you just, you know, put on your little spy eyes and just keep a lookout? Because teachers are doing that anyway. They really care.
Yeah.
It's probably not a good idea to go in and start right with, this kid did this to my kid.
Yeah.
The teachers, they don't really have time for that. If it needs to come to that, I'm sure they'll help. But rather than that, just say, hey, here's what we're observing at home. Would you mind keeping your eyes and ears open at school? And just
yeah.
opening that line of communication, I think, can be really helpful. Remember yeah. that you are hearing half the story. And remember that they are filtering and processing in a not adult way. So, like, I know one thing Allegra does is she's very, like, news reporter. She'll come home very matter-of-factly and talk about kids being mean and this happened and so, because she's very socially observant. She happens mm-hmm. to not be very emotionally sensitive. So it's kind of an odd combination. She notices everything. And I'll say, well, how did you feel? Did that upset you? Are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. Now, there have been times when I can tell she's really upset. And then that was a different, she got really embarrassed one time or somebody called her a name. But so just because the words coming out of their mouth might include things that sound like, you know, red flags, bullies.
Right.
If the child's demeanor, in other words, watch their cues and not just, you're not hearing the whole story, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That
was my...
No, totally. And Clara is the same thing. I mean, she's different from Allegra in many ways, but she would always come home. She's very concerned about being good and doing things right and
mm-hmm.
following the rules in school, which I think is common for
right.
two of them. And so she would be coming home and every day it was like, I would get a report on all the kids who,
yes.
who
got
disobeyed
trouble.
The rules,
yes.
got in trouble, who's on the learning line,
yes.
which is like their like punishment. And it's hilarious. Like now I think it's very funny.
Yeah.
She'll come home and just like, she just rattles it all off.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay.
I forgot about that. Cause Allegra doesn't do that as much as she did in like kindergarten was kindergarten could tell you everybody who had to sit in the chair and
yeah. And you could get the idea, and she would kind of know about all the playground dramas and report everything to me. And I think she was just figuring it out. You know, she was just like, how do I fit in all of this? And there was hardly really ever any emotion behind it. Right. I will say as far as talking to the teacher, I did ask Clara to be moved from sitting next to this one girl. And I know nothing about this girl. She could be lovely.
Right.
The two of them were not good for each other. Yeah. It was not a good fit because Clara was stressed out all the time thinking she was going to get in trouble because this girl wouldn't stop talking to her. Which that's her interpretation. I mean, again, it could be much more mutual. I don't know. But the fact that it was coming up again and again and again, and there was that much stress. And then obviously here's this girl who really wants to be Clara's friend, and she's sitting next to someone who does not enjoy her. I mean, it didn't seem like a good situation for either kid. Right. And it was no big deal to have them moved. And it solved a lot of her anxious social issues immediately, which was nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you can always, if you feel like it's something like that, you can definitely do that. Yeah. And I think another thing we need to do too in these situations is kind of remove ourselves from emotionally,
identifying.
I think we need to, too much, because people in life gravitate towards specific other people. Mm-hmm. We all do it. You do it. I do it. Everybody listening right now has people they enjoy and people they do not enjoy as much. And as adults, we have a lot of power and control over who we choose to spend time with and what situations we put ourselves in, and our kids don't. Mm-hmm. And so if our kids don't like someone, or if someone doesn't like our kid, it's not any kind of reflection on our kids or on us as parents. It's kind of just, it's not a good fit.
Right.
And as they get older and develop more emotional maturity, they might find ways to get along with kids they don't right now.
Right.
Because right now, all those behaviors are so on the surface.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like you learn with time to kind of present yourself a little differently and interact with people a little bit differently. Right. But preschool, kindergarten, first, second grade, it's like they're just like bundles of nerves.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like they're raw material just running around, and conflicts are going to be more conflicts will be more extreme.
Yes.
And dislikes and likes will also be more passionate.
Yes.
So, you know, and I think if you just take a step back, that's a big step.
Agreed. And that is, again, I think why, at least what I was trying to articulate is why helping them deal with whatever emotional stuff they're coming home with, I feel like is a more long-term applicable skill than just how to deal with this particular friend or clique or group issue. Because if they are going to encounter disappointment, they're going to encounter jealousy and, you know, all of that stuff. And the earlier they can kind of have the tools to deal with those feelings and those kind of experiences internally, the better equipped they'll be for all, like you're saying, all kinds of social situations.
Yep. Agreed.
Solved. It's not an easy one, though. It's no, not it's easy. Not.
That's tough. And you'll deal with it in different ways throughout.
Right.
So, and probably into their adulthood.
I have to give a shout out to my mom, because I've said before, my mom listens to this show and she's been telling me we need to talk about playground politics forever. Oh, like, but mom, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So we did it, Mom.
We did it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we have time for our last question, which I wanted to kind of end on because it's kind of bigger and less specific and more philosophical. And this one came from an email quite a while ago from Kate from Massachusetts, like probably many months ago. Maybe Kate doesn't even listen to the show anymore.
Hopefully we can email these everybody.
Yeah, I will. I did that last time and let people know we answered their question. So Kate was very complimentary of us that we sound like we're very confident in our motherhood styles. And thank you, Kate. I don't know if that's true, but thank you. And she says, when did that confidence emerge for you? She said, listening to your podcast, it struck me how many times I second guess myself as a mom. And I consider myself a good mother, she says, with good role models. But there's so many instances where I'm apologetic for my disorganization, my lack of social life, my need to leave early to get the kids to bed or whatever it is. She said, occurred to me I could rebrand my own laughably imperfect approach to life with little ones. You both give me hope and a reality check that this will come in time. So she's saying, when do you finally just decide this is how life is going to be and become confident in not apologizing for it? That's my paraphrase.
Yeah.
And my answer is it goes in big swings. Sometimes I feel like I have all my you-know-what together, and other times I feel like I have zero you-know-what together. I don't know.
No, that totally makes sense. I will say for me, I think I got a big jump of mom confidence when I had my third, because I was doing it. And it was something, having a third kid is a real novelty. People freak out about that. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, you already have two. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah. I remember you in so the many next people, tier for sure.
Yeah. People were very confused and like worried for me. I think people really thought I was going to kind of fall apart. And it was sort of the, I mean, there was always the camp that was like, yay, three babies is great. And then there was the other camp that was like, God, I'm, you know, better you than me. Those people. Right. So, I think the fact that I like had this baby and I managed to continue living and nobody in my house, like, you know, died under a laundry pile or anything. It really, that gave me a boost of confidence. But also what ended up happening with the third is that I was forced to really scale back what advice I listened to, how much outside input I like absorbed. I got really busy and I was also building my business at the same time, like really, like very intensely at that point. And I think having something outside of your own, something outside of your own babies or kids to focus on kind of helps alleviate that a little bit, because then you're not thinking, it's not like you get up in the morning and every single decision you have to make today is about your kids.
Right.
Like I had other decisions to make and other stuff to get done, whether that's a paid job or something completely different. I think it really helps to have something outside to focus on. And because that also automatically limited the amount of exposure I had to other people's parenting opinions, I just didn't have time for it anymore.
Right.
So that was a big jump for me. And I'm thinking about that. Like you said, it's not perfect. So now that I've got kids in different phases, a lot of ways, I feel like having adolescence puts me almost back sometimes in that stage.
Right.
And again, have to get super selective. Like, who do I spend my time with? Who do I listen to? Like, who are the people that I think are qualified to give me parenting advice? And who do I have to, or even to know what's going on in our lives?
Right.
Since we're on the other side of the danger zone, I will share with you that up until about a week ago, we weren't sure Jacob was going to graduate high school. He totally went like off the rails this year, just kind of stopped caring. And I really struggled with that. Like how much of this is my fault? How much of this is something I need to totally throw myself into? How much do I let him make mistakes and screw up and maybe make a big mistake and really have to learn from that and learn a big lesson? So, I mean, it worked out. He made all the stuff up, and unless he tries really hard, he'd have to try really hard at this point not to graduate. But I really had to make decisions about like, who's going to know that? How much do I care? What does it really matter in the long run? Like, let's say he doesn't.
Right.
And I think we talked about this maybe a little bit in California. I don't remember if you were sitting next to
me. Yeah, I was.
With Asha.
Yeah.
Asha, who was in episode what? Bonus episode.
Yeah, bonus episode one. Asha Dornfest.
The parent. Yes. Woohoo. And she, you know, and she was a perfect person to talk to about it, because I know she knows me and she knows who I am as a parent. And I know that we have enough similarities. She's
the most non-judgmental person
on the planet. Well, and also she can like turn anything into support. She's like, you know what? Maybe it'd be good if he didn't graduate. Yes. Like maybe look at it that way. What a lesson to learn. And it was just so funny because of course it would have been terrible in a lot of ways, but it would have been the end of the world. No, he would have made it up and he would have graduated next year. And in 5 years, no one would even remember. So I think that's another big thing. It's like remembering that that problem that's right in front of you right now, or your messy house, or like the fact that you're late for, you know, for appointments because you can't get the kids in the car quickly enough or whatever it is. Like in a few years, none of that is really going to matter.
Right.
All of that's going to pass. Most problems that seem so big aren't as big as they seem. And maybe time. It just takes time and being distracted and busy and productive.
I think those are kinda, all,
you know,
I think those are all so good. I love, so I don't know if you noticed this, but maybe last week I shared on our Facebook page that article that I wrote 2 years ago about going to swim lessons. Remember that funny post that I wrote about how long it took us to get through the door at swim lessons? It was on the happiest poem. Anyway, I posted it saying how much things had changed in 2 years, but the message, and I'll link to it in the show notes, is so similar to what Kate's saying. Cause she's talking about, she's like, I feel like I need to rebrand this and just accept that this is how it is instead of apologizing for it. And that was what I wrote about in the post, because I think it's easy for us to get in the habit of like kind of wearing this hat of like, I'm the frazzled mom who has my hands full. And what I talked about in that post is people treated me that way. I was like huffing and sighing and kind of like being crabby with my kids, and people were sympathetic. People looked at me and felt sorry for me, because that's what I had decided my like role was in this process. And what I changed my mind about specifically with that whole swim lesson commute was that like, that's, we're doing this twice a week. It takes us 8 minutes to get from the car
right
to
the pool. Oh yeah, I remember this.
I can, like, I was defaulting to this, like, mentality just because. It wasn't actually very reflective of how I felt that day. It was just I had decided that I was the stressed out mom who couldn't get all three kids to go through the same door. And that I had the ability not to change, you know, my outlook every minute of every day, but I had the ability to change my mind about what I looked like during that 8 minutes. And so I do think there's some rebranding you can do kind of internally, that instead of putting yourself, like, in the future, wishing yourself to the future when you won't be late, running late, and you won't have to deal with a baby's nap, that, you know, bringing yourself back and being like, this is what it looks like, and it, I don't have to apologize for it. That's a little, like, big picture.
Well, I love that, though, because that reminded me that that's basically what I did with my blog.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really kind of, you know, trying to, and was doing before that, you know, when I was talking about having the third kid, I don't even really remember where the mental shift happened, but I think at some point I just decided I want to be the competent mom who's still laid back and doesn't and isn't perfect and doesn't get everything done, but I just want to feel competent and like I'm doing what I need to do, I'm doing the important things, and I've got a lot going on, but I'm managing it well. And somehow just telling myself I was going to be that person made me that person in some ways. And then, you know, having the blog where I wrote about that and making those conscious choices and really rewriting your story. Like, we all write our own stories every single day. You are writing the story of your life right now. However you decide to interpret the moment you're in right now, it's perception is reality. So we all have tons of power to do that.
And sometimes it helps to see yourself through somebody else's perspective. I know, so my sister, I've talked a lot about, my sister's way younger than me. All her friends are way younger than me. She just got married. And her friends are so cute because they're, one of them has a new baby, but other than that, they're all like in the getting married phase. And they all think that I am like, I'm just this alien to them, right? Because I have three kids and a house and a husband and, you know, like work part-time on the side. And they're, you know, they're very sweet. They're so complimentary. Like, oh, I can't wait. You know, I love your family and you're so, and it does, it's very flattering, but you have to remember, like, not everyone, somebody probably aspires to be where you are. And I don't mean that like you should appreciate it, but, none of this lasts forever. And then there's like, Megan, you sometimes have told me like, it's so simple when you're just in those years. And I'm like, it's not simple. You know, I'm in the weeds. So sometimes if you like can almost see yourself how someone else sees you, that this is, it is temporary and it is kind of beautiful in its own horrible way. And that can give you, the confidence you need to just get through it, maybe, since we're talking about confidence. But sometimes it just helps to see like, oh, somebody else thinks this phase is, they're not asking me for me to apologize.
Right.
They think this is cool. Like, they think this is a cool place to be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that, that actually leads me to, like, I guess what will be my final thought on this topic, but really relates to that, is I, especially when I had three, I started getting a lot of comments from people who would say, I just can't, you're so, you have it together. Like, you guys are so cool. I love your little family. Like, you got, you know, like, just, they kept telling me like I had it all together. And part of me wanted to be like, when someone compliments your outfit and you have to tell them you got it on sale, like that, like, I wanted to be like, no, it's terrible. Nothing is together. My house is a wreck, or it looks clean, but everything's just shoved in a drawer or whatever. And, you know, I kind of started just letting myself bask in that a little bit without being dishonest or an egomaniac. I would be, you know, I kind of got to the point where I'd say, well, thanks, you know, I'm hanging in there. Like, there's a lot you don't maybe know about what's going on with me, but maybe I am kind of cool. Maybe I am competent. Maybe I am pulling this off.
Yeah.
And I think when you can really accept those little compliments or people being awed because you're in this stage and you're not, you know, you're alive. Kind of bask in that a little bit. It's okay. It's, it doesn't mean you think you're, you know, maybe you are awesome, but it doesn't mean you're, I don't know, arrogant.
No, and it reminds me of our episode we did about your superpowers and your kryptonite, because that is so true, that to what you're doing, what you're pulling off to somebody just seems impossible. But there's things that seem impossible to you that others do easily. So reminding ourselves that we have those superpowers and kryptonite. Kate's question has brought up several back episodes of this podcast that I feel like I'm going to link to in the show notes. Parenting through the hard times, kind of dealing with anxiety or depression or just funks. This reminds me of a little bit. And also dealing with criticism. We did a whole episode about dealing with criticism, because I feel like this mom confidence thing is not, it's not a linear upward trajectory, like you've said and we've said. It's big swings. And so is happiness as a mom. And so is, you know, feeling secure in what you're doing. So when you need those reminders, I'm going to link to those episodes as well, because I think they are related. But yeah, we're going to say the same thing we said in every other question. Hang in there.
Hang in there. And what? It gets better. And you can do this. And it's all going to be okay. That's what
the hashtag hang in there. Just kidding. Yep. Okay. Well, those were our four questions for today. All of this will be at the mom. Everything we talked about and mentioned will be at themomhour.com. Look for episode 52. And we would love that if you shared this show with a friend who maybe is going through something similar. We talked about so many different phases and issues that if this reminds you of something one of your friends is going through, just send them a link and say, hey, I think you'd like this podcast. We'd love that, because everybody listening learned about this podcast somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of you heard about it from each other listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Really
cool.
So
I love how the podcast community is still so kind of tight and like,
yeah,
insular, and like we're all, you know, kind of connected in a way. It's cool. So
love it.
Share with a friend.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody. We will be back next week with another new show.
Yep. See you then.